All right, good afternoon, everybody. I hope you guys are all enjoying Tech Ed, and thank you for coming to my session today. My name is Karina Black. I'm a user experience design lead on the Windows Phone design team, and I'm going to be talking about Windows Phone app design principles today. And before I get started, I want to just get a general sense of who we have in the audience here. Can I see a show of hands for those of you who have created a Windows Phone application to date? Okay, so quite a few. How many of you are interested in creating one in the near future? Another show of hands. All right, awesome. Yay. So for those of you who have raised your hands, actually everybody in the audience, how many of you are well-versed in our Metro-style design principles and our Windows Phone design language? Another show of hands. A few. All right. Awesome. All right, so I'm going to be talking about both today, the Metro-style design principles that are applicable to both Windows Phone and Windows 8, as well as the Windows Phone design language, and how to use each in creating a Windows Phone application. So it should be a great session for those of you creating applications today and those of you interested in creating applications in the future that seamlessly integrate into our app platform. So I'm going to start out with a bit of historical information detailing how we got to where we are with respect to the Metro design principles. And then I'm going to go into the principles a little bit more deeply, as well as the Windows Phone design language. And in doing so, I'm also going to talk about how to apply each in the development of a Windows Phone application. So with that, let's go over influence and history, starting with Bauhaus. The Bauhaus Design School started in Germany back in the 1920s. It's well known for the modern design movement, and it was all about fierce reduction and removal of ornamentation in designs. So for instance, rather than a chair or a building with ornamentation and detailing such as frills, maybe carvings such as flowers, you'll find clean, straightforward lines, similar to what you're seeing on screen right now. It's about a focus on fierce reduction, as I just mentioned, as well as taking a design down to its true essence. It's also about design for the masses, targeting functionality and beauty in the simplicity of the experience. So in line with design for the masses are transportation and wayfinding graphics, very much an influence on Metro-style design. And it's a universal design language used throughout the world to help users, to help people find their way, whether it be Narita, the London Underground, the Library of Congress, or a shopping mall anywhere in the world. It's universal use of iconography that universally communicates to a wide variety of users. It's use of clean and consistent typography, such as you're seeing in the screen here, and unique graphic elements with bold use of color. It's very much in line with the mantra that Bauhaus put forward years ago and Metro-style design today. Swiss-style design, otherwise known as the international typographic style, is also very influential to Metro. It's about beautiful graphic design and excellent typography. Often sans-serif fonts are used, as you're seeing in this awesome poster by Paul Scheer. It's for the Public Theater. You'll often see asymmetric layouts as well, and this poster demonstrates asymmetric layouts. There's a strong use of a grid system, again, bold color, and photography over illustration. And the Swiss-style design is prevalent in today's time. You'll see it in advertising, packaging, print, and other media. Some really good examples that you'll want to check out if you haven't seen them are Crate & Barrel's packaging, as well as the identity system for American Airlines. They're both excellent examples. So Metro-style design has also been influenced by some of the great work done previously at Microsoft. And I want to talk about an example from Alpha's Labs. Not only is it typographic, clean, elegant design, but this example, this video that you're going to see here in a moment, utilizes motion very well. So let me switch over to my video. There we go. Try that again. All right. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and pause it. Again, beautiful typographic design, clean and elegant. Content is at the forefront, and they're utilizing motion to add delight to the experience and really enhance the usability of the experience as well. And motion is a key element in Metro-style design. Another influence from Microsoft is the work done on Windows Media Center, and we're seeing an example here, clearly typographic. If you look at the start screen there, it's all about type. And there are two axes of navigation, both horizontally and vertically. And if you look at the album covers, it's content first, content that is most important to your users. There's no embellishments or interpretation of these album covers. It's the album covers themselves. This is what users are familiar with, and they want this content. And Zune is very much in line with what we just saw with Media Center. Again, the content is front and center. That's what users want to interact with. That's what they're using your application for. Zune HD is very much in line with this as well, and with respect to Zune HD, we learned about the importance of touch interfaces, as well as using typography in interesting ways to access content on a small screen. And this has led us to where we are today. So Windows Phone, Windows 8, the Xbox experience that you're seeing here are all clearly influenced by Bauhaus, wayfinding and transportation graphics, Swiss-style design, and the work done previously at Microsoft. The user experience that you're seeing it's a system. There's a consistency across these experiences, and that system is Metro-style design. So while I have you here, I want to stop for a moment. We're seeing the new start screen, and I want to show you a quick video that talks at length about this start screen experience. It's one of the great new features that's coming out with Windows Phone 8. It's also going to be available for Windows Phone 7.5 devices. It's much more personal for users. Users are more empowered to customize their start screen experience than they ever were before. And it's just, I'm absolutely in love with it. So let me show you a quick video that talks more deeply about it.
It starts with a tile. A tile that's special, that's alive. Live tiles are the heart and soul of a Windows phone. It's a simple, elegant thing, but so powerful, and no other phone has them. We know that our users really fall in love with their Windows phones, and the biggest reason is that live tiles make the technology disappear, turning their phone into a unique fingerprint that precisely reflects each and every one of them. Live tiles are also the face of Windows Phone. And now that very pretty face is about to become drop-dead gorgeous. And a lot more personal. Introducing the new Windows Phone Start Screen. We're putting people in total control of their tiles. Now, not only can they pin the stuff they love right on a live tile, they can also set the size of all those tiles, whether each is a person or an app. If someone's really into text and SMS, They can make the messaging tile the full size so they can see texts without opening the app. If someone's not a heavy email user, they can make that tile small and put it a little out of the way. And for all those power users with tons of apps they use every day, they can make all of those tiles really small so they reduce the amount of scrolling on the screen. No other phone can do anything like this. The result is that Windows Phone is even more personal than ever before. So now people won't just be buying a phone. It'll be Tom, the music lover, getting a Tom, the music lover phone. And Laura, the social butterfly, getting a social butterfly phone. It'll be Anna, the bookworm, getting a bookworm phone. And Dave, the sports nut, getting a sports nut phone. It's the best of what Windows Phone already is. Made even better.
All right. Pretty amazing, right? I'm very excited about this new start screen experience. And sorry to sidetrack a little, but I thought it was important to call attention to it and show you the nice little video that the design studio put together talking about the new experience. It is really compelling, more personal, relevant, and connected, which is, again, very exciting. So back to our presentation. And what I want to do now is refresh the basics, starting with the Metro-style design principles. And what are design principles? Well, they guide creation of a common set of experiences, and it's important to note that they're not a paint-by-numbers solution to design. It's not a book that you're going to be able to open up, and it's going to tell you what to do at each step in the design process. It's a framework in which you can think about design, and it's a decision-making tool that you can use throughout the design process. These are our design principles, again, the same for Windows 8 and Windows Phone, as well as other properties across Microsoft. Pride in craftsmanship, fast and fluid, authentically digital, do more with less, and win as one. So pride in craftsmanship is really about paying attention to the details. The details really are more important than you might think at first glance. And not paying attention to the details can actually harm the usability of your experience. They must be worked into the process from the very beginning. You can't tack on paying attention to the details at the end of the process. Use of a grid system, both Windows Phone and Windows 8 use a grid system, can help you sweat the details, pay attention to those details, help you organize, group, and align information, make the experience consistent from screen to screen, and it can also help you take advantage of negative space or that empty space in your application, drawing attention to what's most important on the screen, that content. Use of typography to add rhythm and structure to an experience is also very important with respect to this particular principle. The combination of use of a grid and attention to your typography to add hierarchy in the information is all about pride and craftsmanship. Fast and fluid has to do with touch interfaces. Touch interfaces need to be fast and respond quickly to user interactions. It's also about adding motion to experiences, motion to give context, to add delight, and to add continuity to an experience. Motion really is much more than visual eye candy. It adds delight, and it can also hint at the user interaction. Take, for instance, our panorama. For those of you that are familiar, you'll find this in the People Hub, the opening experience for the People Hub, as well as our Music and Videos Hub. When Panorama loads, it slides in from the right, and you see the content that is hidden as it slides in initially, and you also see content peeking over out on the right, and it kind of hints to the user that there's content to the right, the left and the right, and if they pan, they'll get to that information. So it's hinting at the interaction, improving the usability of an experience. It really is important. Authentically digital has to do with cloud connected. Our digital experiences these days are connected to other digital experiences. And with respect to Windows Phone, users are going to expect nothing less. They want to be connected to those other digital experiences as well as their information in the cloud. It's also about designing for the form factor and being direct and honest. And what I mean by direct and honest is it's pixels on a screen. It's not about pretending to be something that it's not. It's not about modeling after real-world tools and objects or simulating, again, real-world tools or information. It's not iconographic. What it is like having content be depicted as content really is and assuming that that content is interactive by default. It's infographic. So do more with less is about targeting your experiences, being good at something. You can't do everything in your applications. You should do something well. It's also about removing the content or the Chrome. I'm sorry, you want the content there. The content is most important. That's where users are using your application. But rather removing the Chrome, the elements in an interface that are going to distract from that experience. So users can focus on the content that is most important to them. And lastly, Win is One is about leveraging the UI model. Don't reinvent the wheel. We have certain patterns in our native experiences. They're available in the platform, and you should use them. Users don't use an application to learn how that particular piece of software works. They use it, again, to get at that content that they love that's most important to them. So the design principles are on one side of the equation. On the other is the Windows Phone design language. And a design language drives a thematic experience by concretely describing aspects of navigation, layout, motion, topography, higher-level application patterns, and control patterns, just to give you a few examples. It doesn't describe all aspects necessarily, and it's not prescriptive, but it describes the key aspects to ensure that there is that thematic quality to a set of solutions. These are some of the design language elements that are available for Windows Phone applications. And let's go ahead and take a closer look at some of the key aspects, starting with navigation. So Windows Phone uses a hub-and-spoke navigation model. When users begin interacting with an application, they go to the start screen or the application list. They'll launch your application. They'll go to page one in that application and navigate deeper to page two, to page three. When they press the back button, they go back to page two. Back again, they go back to page one. Back again, they go back to the start screen or the application list where they launch the application. It's a consistent navigation model, and users expect your applications to work that way. I alluded to this just a second ago. Windows Phone has hardware buttons, one of which is the back button. Another is a button that will take the user to the start screen. And a third is a button that will take the user to Bing search. I want to call attention to the fact that Windows 8 doesn't utilize hardware buttons such as we see here. With respect to the hardware back button, for instance, in Windows 8 applications, it's going to be important to implement a software back button. So Windows Phone applications also have a unique silhouette. And Windows 8 applications do as well. Windows Phone is slightly different. There's an area for status bar information, such as time of day, the battery life, internet connectivity. There's also space for the content, the meat of that application, as well as an application bar and an application bar menu. In the application bar and the application bar menu, commands are placed that can't be seamlessly integrated into the content space. There's also a grid system that we use in our native experiences. It's the grid that you're seeing here. Again, it does help align and organize information and provide a consistent experience from screen to screen in an application. Our grid system is, again, different from Windows 8, but we both use grid systems. And there are some key application patterns I want to call attention to very quickly, starting with Panorama. Panorama is oftentimes seen as the opening experience in applications. It's the opening experience, and again, our pictures hub as well as our music and videos hub. It's really this immersive and expansive experience, drawing the user into the content. You'll oftentimes take content from various areas in your application and bring it to the forefront here in this panorama. Think magazine cover, similar to a magazine cover. One of the reasons you buy a magazine in a store is because you see the cover on the shelf and you're interested in the content inside. It draws you in. Panorama is very similar. Another core pattern is pivot. It's focused and fast. You'll see it in our Outlook experience. It also is used for opening, for the opening experience in applications. Again, we use it for Outlook. And you'll oftentimes find it deeper within an application as well. In Outlook, it allows you to pivot on the various views on the data set. It can also organize a variety of data sets into meaningful groups so that users can navigate that information. Another really important pattern that we just saw are our live tiles, and Windows 8 also uses live tiles. This is where you can add a lot of life and vibrancy to your experiences. This is where you can bring that personal, relevant, and connected aspects of your application to the forefront for users. When they pick up the phone and open the lock screen, they're going to see the start screen. And here, they can see live information about your application, drawing them into that application. This Metro Bar start, a tile that we're seeing here, is a really good example. So there are several things that they're doing. They're highlighting drink specials, which is very interesting, and they're also highlighting the points that you've earned by visiting their bar. So they're bringing in a little bit of that game theory to bring out the competitive nature of people and draw them into the application and, of course, the bar. Beneficial for both the user and the developer of this application. So next, motion is a very key element in Metro-style design. And both Windows 8 and Windows Phone use motion throughout their experiences. The use of motion is different, but motion is very important. It really, again, does add to both the usability and the delight of an experience, provides context, continuity, and delight. With respect to Windows Phone, there are a variety of motion patterns that you'll see in our native experiences, and many of those are available in the Windows Phone toolkit for your third-party application development needs. And there are three examples. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of some of the animations that are available in Windows Phone. Let me step back. This animation here is Continuum. So we're seeing an email list, and when a user presses on one of the items in the email list, they're taken to the details, and the title for that item in the list is actually brought animated seamlessly over into the details, so you feel that continuity from page transition to page transition. This next animation is Swivel, and what Swivel does is typically used for transient UI alerts and message boxes. It seamlessly swivels the UI into place that the user needs to view and possibly interact with. And when they dismiss that UI, it swivels out. This last one is a slide page transition. And what this is when you navigate from one page to another page in the UI, the new page slides into place. And if you were to press the back button, you would slide back to the previous page. Again, creating that context and that continuity in experiences. So, again, just to readdress what we've just covered, design principles are used to provide a continuity across a set of experiences, such as what we're seeing here on screen. The combination of principles and a design language makes experiences a little more aligned, actually far more aligned, such as what we're seeing in this set of screens from Windows Phone applications. And that alignment comes through, again, use of the design language, the consistent grids and layouts, application and control patterns, as well as motion, just to give you a few examples. So we've talked about the history and influence behind Metro Style Design. We've talked about the Metro Style Design principles and the Windows Phone design language. Let's take what we've seen and use that to develop, or design rather, a real-world Windows Phone application. And there is a process to design, starting with a clear definition of the problem space. It's also important to explore the competitive landscape as well as a variety of design solutions for that particular problem space. In the beginning, you go very broad. And as you get further along in the process, you'll hone in on a specific set of solutions. At this point, it's important to conceptualize and bring to life the more appropriate set of solutions that solve that problem. So to make it a little bit more tangible, it's about understanding who your user is, how they're going to interact with your application, and what their particular needs are. It's also important to get really crisp with respect to the purpose of your application. In line with the principle of do more with less, you can't do everything, so be good at something. It's important to focus. With this information, you'll define a set of business, technology, and user experience requirements for your application. And you'll, of course, need to prioritize those and pop the important ones up to the top. And this is done through analyzing the key scenarios and usage patterns that your users are going to take when interacting with your application. So in our case, we are going to have a lot of that work done for us already. We're going to translate a Windows 8 application, this Contoso Food Trucks application, to Windows Phone. And I'm going to talk about some of the key design language differences that you need to keep in mind when translating from one platform to the other or designing for both simultaneously. I want to quickly mention, this particular application, there's a case study on the Windows 8 User Experience Guidelines site, so you want to check that out. So, a little bit about this particular application. It's targeted at patrons of Contoso Food Trucks, and it helps them find and browse food trucks near their current location, and it's as simple as that. We're, again, leveraging much of the goodness, the work that was done previously by the Windows 8 designers and developers. Many of our requirements are the same. In fact, most. Some will be a little bit different. In particular, we're going to prioritize some of those requirements a little bit differently for the Windows Phone form factor. For example, the application for Windows 8 allows users to rate and review food trucks. We're going to deprioritize that functionality in our Windows 8 version, or sorry, Windows Phone version, at least for the first rev of the experience. It may be something we bring in later, but for the on-the-go, fast and fluid type experiences that you typically have when interacting with a phone, as well as the small form factor, it's something that we can reasonably deprioritize. So we're going to do that. So let me talk a little bit about what we're seeing on screen here with respect to this Contoso Food Trucks application. So on the left, we're seeing featured trucks and some review information, as well as the distance that truck is, or those trucks are, from your current location. We're also seeing a grouping of trucks near me. And then if you were to pan over to the right, you would see other groupings of trucks, such as Asian food, bagels, Mexican food, a variety of different groupings of the information within the number of trucks that Contoso Food Trucks has. If the user were to click on one of these items on the screen here, it would take them to the details for the food truck, and they would be able to also see the menu that that food truck has to offer, as well as reviews and directions to, and they would see where that food truck was and be able to get directions to that particular food truck from their current location. As I mentioned, in the Windows 8 version, users are also able to rate and review food trucks and search for particular trucks. I'm just naming some of the functionality that we're going to be talking about here in a moment, as well as shared details for a truck. So say, for instance, you are intending to meet a friend or some family member at one of these trucks, you would be able to share the details for that truck so that they would be able to meet you there. All right, so some of the design language differences that we're going to need to take into consideration when designing our app. First of all, I want to call attention to the fact that Windows 8 has this concept of semantic zoom. So on this opening screen that we're seeing here, users are able to pinch and pull their fingers in to zoom, get a different view on the information, essentially zoom out, and see a listing of all the groupings and types of food trucks that are available. So Windows Phone doesn't have this concept. We do have a potential solution that I'll show you here in a moment. We'll utilize Long List Selector to control in the Windows Phone Toolkit to allow users to view all the different categories of trucks. So some of the app patterns are different, and I talked to this when I was discussing with you the Windows Phone design language. We have Panorama and Pivot. Windows 8 doesn't. We're going to use Panorama for this opening screen that we're seeing here to display our information and tease users into the content. So the next thing that's important to pay attention to is Windows 8 has this concept of charms. There are contracts in the underlying operating system that you as a developer can tie into. And with respect to Contoso food trucks, the application is using contracts for settings, for sharing, and for searching for trucks. So we need to have a solution that's custom in our Windows Phone application. And this is another view. If I were to search via one of those charms that we saw on the previous screen, I would see the search UI that we're seeing here. Again, these contracts are part of the underlying operating system. So the next thing is, I mentioned this earlier, Windows Phone has a hardware back button and Windows 8 doesn't. Windows 8 utilizes software back buttons, and I have that highlighted at the top of the screen here. So there needs to be a translation of this software back button to our hardware back button. That's really important to keep in mind. Again, you want to be consistent with the experience that you find in Windows Phone itself. So it's going to be important to modify your Windows 8 version of the application appropriately for Windows Phone. The next thing, panning, I'm calling attention here. Panning is typically horizontal in Windows 8 applications. In Windows Phone, it's very often both horizontal and vertical, as we'll see here in a moment. You find that, again, in our Pivot and Panorama experiences, many applications, third-party, native, and such. And I'm also calling attention to App Bar here, and it's not really a huge difference, but in terms of interaction on Windows 8, the App Bar is not shown by default. On Windows Phone, it is. It can be in full view or the default mode for App Bar. It can also be in minimized mode, but it's always visible in Windows 8 to bring up the App Bar where commands are placed that can't be seamlessly integrated into the application space or the content area. You gesture from the top or the bottom to bring the App Bar into view. So, with this information, the next step in the process is to work out the information architecture and the content and data for each screen, as well as the flow from screen to screen in your application. I typically start with pen and paper at this point in the process. I recommend that you all do the same. It's fast, it's easy, you can get the information out, you can share it with others and get feedback. I think it's a very viable means of getting started in this process. There are other things that you can use as well, PowerPoint, Sketchflow, a variety of tools. So I'm going to go over to Expression Design, where I have a couple of versions of my information architecture, again, the data for each screen, and the general flow from each screen outlined. This is an image, basically the same image that you just saw in the PowerPoint deck a moment ago, but I've sharpened it a bit too much, so it's not looking quite as good. But let's talk about the details that we're finding here in our application. So we start out, again, I did this with pen and paper, super fast, to get the information down so I could start analyzing it and iterating on my experience. So I start at the start screen, And as I mentioned, we're going to use Panorama for that opening screen. This is Panorama here, and we have featured content very similar to what we saw in the Windows 8 version of this application, nearby trucks, as well as all trucks. Again, Windows 8 has that semantic zoom functionality. We don't have it in Windows Phone. Long list selector, in this particular case, can work to simulate, in my opinion, that semantic zoom functionality. And I've modeled it here. This is a group header for a grouping of a certain set of trucks. When the user clicks on that group header, they're going to be navigated to a screen, and hopefully this is clear. If not, I'll explain it, that provides other group headers for the categorization of trucks. And if, let's just imagine this is A, B, C, D, E, F, G. That's actually what it is, although you may not be able to see it. If you were to click on one of these items as a user, it would actually navigate the list to that content so that you could scroll that information and view that information quickly and easily. I also talked about search in the Contoso Food Truck version, Windows 8 version of the application. We have to create a custom search experience. I've added a search button to my app bar. And when that search button is clicked, I'm going to be navigated to a search page where I can enter my search criteria. And when I hit return, I'm taken to the search results. If I were to select a particular result, I would be taken to a pivot experience. That's what we're seeing right here in these three screens that contain the details for a particular truck. The same would apply for clicking on any of the items in this opening screen, featured trucks, nearby trucks, or an item in this list of trucks in this categorization UI here. So I'd be taken to the details and be able to view the details as well as ratings, the overall general ratings for that truck. I would be able to see the location for that truck in relation to where I am. And if for some reason I wasn't able to view my current location, I could click on this Me button and it would bring me into view as well as the location of that truck, so I could see them both simultaneously on screen. And there's also driving directions in the app bar. If I were to click on that button, I would be navigated to a screen that presents me with driving directions to that particular truck. Reviews are part of this experience, and you would be able to examine the reviews for a particular truck. And in the initial iteration of the application, the information architecture and flow, I had the ability to add a review in the UI. We see that in the app bar here. It's something we're deprioritizing in this particular application that we're building. So in later iterations on this information architecture, you'll see that it's gone. There's also the ability to sign in. It's a menu item in the app bar, and that would take you to a screen that would allow you to sign in. And the same would apply at the panorama, that opening screen level. There was a sign-in button in the menu bar, and it would navigate you again to that login screen. And so that is the first iteration of my application. Again, the information architecture flow. And again, I did this with pen and paper extremely fast. I'm getting that information out so that I could get stakeholder feedback and start iterating. It's definitely essential for the process. So the next iteration of my application is a little bit more full fidelity. In this case, I'm actually examining what this splash screen experience might look like. That's what we're seeing here. As well as more full fidelity visualizations on the featured content, the near me content, and the all trucks list of information. So again, this is long list selector, and I'm displaying the categorization of trucks here in long list selector. And as a user, again, if I were to click on one of these group headers, it would navigate me to a page that allowed me to select a particular category, and it would scroll that list of information on the previous screen to that set of results. I also have, in the previous featured content, I really want to talk about the importance of this iteration, the process of iteration in the design of an application. This really is important to, it's really about sweating the details, getting the experience top-notch for your users. So what we're seeing here is I'm showing one featured content item. In the Windows 8 version, there were several featured content items. For the near me information, it's showing several near me items, and it scrolls horizontally, which is something that works seamlessly in panoramas. And then down here in the truck details, again, more full fidelity. And I don't think there's anything else interesting to talk about here. It's pretty much the same as we saw in my pen and paper version of the information architecture. So let's take a look at the final version. In this final version, I'm starting to detail out the experience for my live tiles. Live tiles are where you can really add a lot of user value to your application, draw the user into your experience. So in the case of Contoso food trucks, we have, if the user were to pin the application to their start screen, the default image, of course, would be the truck, which is iconic for Contoso food trucks. And the live aspect would be displaying some deal of the day for the featured content area. We've also finessed our splash screen and the content on the opening screen. So here in Near Me, the rest of the content is the same, but in Near Me, the information is now organized vertically, so you scroll vertically to navigate that information. And the reason that I did this is because there may be many near me trucks, and it's not ideal to navigate horizontally in Windows Phone to view all of those trucks that would be near me. It's more consistent with what you find in our native application experiences when there are many near me items, in this particular case, to navigate vertically. So we've changed the layout of that information. And another thing that we've done in our description information for our truck, we've also added a deal of the day section to this page to help get users to go to the particular truck. There's also, we overlooked this. This was actually in the Windows 8 version of the application. And it's a really important aspect of this particular user experience, the ability to view the menu for this particular truck. So we've added that into our information architecture. And we've done a lot of changes to the location details for the truck. So before, we were using UI that looked very similar to mapping UI, and there are a lot of problems with those similarities. Users are potentially going to expect that they can navigate and pan on that map. And panning around on a map that's hosted in a panorama or pivot is really going to conflict with the gestures for that panorama or pivot. And we definitely don't want that. It's going to create a bad user experience. So we've changed the design so it doesn't look like a typical map that you could interact with in such a way. And it's a screenshot of the current location for the truck, essentially. You could think of it that way. And we've added some other interesting information. We've added the ability to click on this call work. it's an interesting label. It should be call truck. Information here to call the truck. Maybe you have a question. Maybe you want to ask if they're still there. You can also view their website or send them email. Driving directions to the truck location from your location still exist. You can see that command in the app bar here. And we've added the ability to share truck details, that location for that truck. It was an oversight in those previous iterations of our information architecture. It's important. You're likely going to want to share the details for a particular truck so your friends or your family can meet you there. So let's see, a couple more things. Actually, I think that's the gist of it. So now we've worked out our information architecture, the detail and data for every page within our application. And, oh, actually, there's one other thing I want to call attention to. I overlooked that here. With respect to sharing, you can share via messaging, Hotmail, Outlook, and Facebook. And if you were to press on one of these items, you would be taken to the application so that you could actually share your truck details with that individual via these particular means. So again, we've worked out our information architecture, the details and data for each page, and the flow between pages. And now, the next step in the design process is to continue refining and actually commit that experience to working code to implement that experience so that you can deploy it to the device and do user testing and further iterations and improvements to that application. So what I want to do now is I want to take you to a working version of the application as well as Expression Blend. Let's try this again. Come on, there we go. Okay, a working version of our application on our emulator, as well as I'm going to have Expression Blend open. I want to show you the current state of our application, and there are some issues that we're going to address in this current implementation. It doesn't map one-to-one with the information architecture and flow diagram that we've just reviewed. So we're going to fix some of those issues. And in the process, I'm going to call attention to some of the things that you should keep in mind when developing your application and some of the tools and really great functionality that Blend has to offer to help you design a great experience. So let's take a look at the working version of the application using the emulator. So again, actually, let's start at the start screen. So we have our live tile on our start screen, and it will be live here in a moment. It's live, so 2-for-1 at Bagler today. If I were to press on this, because I want 2-for-1 at Bagler, I would be shown the splash screen for Contoso food trucks, and then the application would be brought into view. I see the featured content. I can pan over to the right or the left. Let's go to the right. On the right, I'm seeing the near me information, and again, it scrolls vertically, allowing me to display multiple items in this near me list. There's also this listing for all trucks utilizing this long list control available in the Windows Phone Toolkit. And if I click on one of the item headers or the group headers, I can navigate quickly to Mexican food. Maybe I'm interested in Mexican food. Takes me to that information, and I can scroll that information and get to the particular truck that I might be interested in. If I were to press on one of the food trucks listed in that opening screen, I would be navigated to the details, the description information, the menu, the location information, and again, I could get driving directions to this particular truck. And I'm also able to share this particular truck's details with somebody that I might be meeting at this particular truck. You're also seeing nice page transitions, very similar to what you see in our native experiences. Again, these are available in the Windows Phone Toolkit. So let's go back to, and reviews are also available, part of the information architecture that we just saw a moment ago. So let's go back to the description page. If you recall, the description page in our information architecture diagram looks slightly different than what we see here. In the information architecture diagram, we had deal of the day and a deal of the day information chunk as well as our food information chunk. We're missing that from this screen. So I'm going to go into Expression Blend and I'm going to add that. And I'm going to show you some of the things that you're probably going to want to do when designing your pages, your screens, to help you take advantage of, you know, consistency and alignment, pride in craftsmanship, attention to the details. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make my grid visible. I have it in my project, and in my Objects and Timeline tool window, I can make that grid visible. The next thing I'm going to do is open, I'm working in the Objects and Timeline pane here. Let me make it a little bit bigger. Maybe. There we go. And I'm going to get to the text block information, the text information down below the image. And I again want to add the deal of the day information and the our food information grouping. To do that, I'm going to duplicate this text block for barbecue truck and place it above this bottom text block, because I'm going to use that as a starting point for the label for deal of the day. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to add kind of hierarchy to the information that's displayed. The parent really is this barbecue truck or barbecue star truck, and deal of the day is subordinate to that. So I'm going to make the text a little bit smaller, and I'm going to utilize some of the system resources that are available to make this happen. So I'll select that label or that text block, and I'm going to choose from one of the system resources here. I'm going to go with phone font size medium. Actually, I'm going to make it a little bit bigger. Let's go with medium large. So now I have my label in place, and I'm going to convert it to a local value. It doesn't need to be data bound. And type in deal of the day. So next, I'm going to position this information nicely to the grid. I have this grid here, and it's going to help me design a really beautiful experience. So I'm going to set, using this layout section, the position of that deal of the day text so it aligns baseline with this row of this row in the grid here. So I'm going to do a bit of tweaking to get it the way that I want it to look. I'm going to try a top margin of 28, and it's looking pretty good. The next thing that I'm going to do is align this textual information associated with deal of the day in a similar manner to what you see with the title barbecue star here, as well as the subordinate information for what this type of truck is and its hours of operation. So I'm going to select that bottom text block. I'm going to get rid of the top margin for this particular item. And when I did that, the text nicely aligned in a similar manner to what we see with the information above. Again, I'm using this grid to help me optimize my experience, get the alignment precise, and make the experience beautiful. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to duplicate these two items. And I'm going to do that in Expression Blend, I'm just going to control, click, and drag. And I'm going to detail out the R truck information. So I'm going to start with the title. I'm going to change it to R truck. And the alignment is actually looking really good for now. So I'll leave that as is. And I'm going to change the content for deal of the day. It would eventually be data bound. For demonstration purposes, I'm just going to type in the text for the deal of the day. So I'm going to convert it to a local value and change the information to buy one meal, get one free. Pretty good deal. And I also want to change the foreground color for this item so that it maps to our highlight color, which is this green that you see here. And I'm using this color picker and mapping that text to the color for the stars. So I have that looking pretty good. So now our truck information is not aligning nicely to the grid. I actually want to move it up a little bit. And the problem is this text block here has a height set on it, so I'm going to auto size that text block, and information shifts up as I expected. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to shift our truck up a bit by setting the top margin to 8. So now it's nicely aligned to the grid. If I turn my grid off, I'm going to go ahead and collapse it. you'll see that we have all of the information that we had in our information architecture diagram now incorporated into our experience. To get that hierarchy in the information display, we utilized both our grid and system resources to help us make this happen quickly. And Expression Blend made it very simple to utilize those system resources. So next, let's go ahead and run our application. Actually, let me go back to the application. And if we go back to the opening screen, you'll see that we're missing our search command in our application bar. Clearly an oversight in this particular version of the implementation. So I'm going to add that back. And Blend makes it really easy to add your application bar. So the opening panorama is in mainpage.xaml. So I'm switching over to that tab. And I'm going to select this top node, phone application page, and type app bar over in my properties window, search box, or app. And it brings up the application bar properties. And I'm just going to click on new. And an application bar is generated for me. The next thing I want to do is I want to add that search button. To do that, there's this button collection, collections item. There's also a menus collections item. I don't need to add a menu for my particular application, but I could do that if it was appropriate. And again, I don't need to. So I'm going to add my button and add my application bar button. And over in the properties section, there's this icon URI. And I want a search button. So I'm going to select, there are a variety of icons that you can choose from by default that map to our native application experiences. I have my search bar already referenced in my application, so I'm just going to use that icon. I can also point to a custom icon if that's most appropriate for my particular scenario. I'm going to also add text for my button, and the text is appropriately called search. And if I hit OK, my button is seamlessly added to my application bar. And if I were to run my application, by hitting F5 from Expression Blend, you'll see that my app bar is in place. The color's not looking right, though, so we'll fix that here in a moment. And if I expand, you'll see that the helper text search is visible down below. I would need to hook this up in code behind, and I actually have a commented out version of my app bar, which I will uncomment in a moment. But I first want to show you how we're going to fix the color for our app bar. To do that, I can change the background color. I could also change the foreground color if that was appropriate. In this particular application, all I want to do is change the background color. And I have a color in my resource dictionary for my app bar that I'm going to reference. I do that by clicking this little square that you see here that my mouse is over. And I'm able to access my local resources. And again, I have an app bar color in my resource dictionary that I'm going to leverage. We didn't see a lot of change there, but I am referencing that color now. And resource dictionaries are really great for placing styles into, colors into, and maybe retemplating of controls, items that you're going to reuse over and over across your application experience. In the case of this color, I'm using this application bar color across my application, so it makes sense to place that as a resource in my resource dictionary. So what I want to do now is uncomment my working application bar so that we can navigate to other pages and address other problems in the app. And I'm going to go ahead and delete the application bar that Blend just generated. And I'm doing that in XAML view. And I just want to mention just real quickly, when I'm working in Expression Blend, I work interchangeably between the design view and XAML view, so that's why you're seeing me do this. Let's go back to full screen and Control 0 to zoom out. If I hit F5, we can take a look at the current state of our app. And in this case, the final version of our app bar, we're using the minimized app bar. which really allows that opening panorama to be immersive and expansive. So it is something that you'll probably want to consider when using app bars on panoramas. I can bring up that search command by clicking on the three dots, and then I'm navigated to search. But clearly I have a problem. I don't see anything here. I have some text field, but I don't see it. So I need to address this problem. If I go over to my search page, I see that Contoso Food Truck, that title is there, as well as the text box control is entirely visible on this screen. So I'm wondering what the problem is. In Expression Blend, I can actually explore theme settings. These are user set theme settings, so users can customize the background color from a dark to a light color, as well as the accent color in an application. And I can explore those combinations and the effects on my app using Expression Blend. And so that's what I'm going to do here. I am going to go from the light theme to the dark theme and see what happens. All right, my text information disappeared. My text box control is still visible, though, which is interesting. So in my version of Contoso Food Truck, I have chosen to hard code all of the colors in the application for branding purposes. Another option is to map to the system resources for colors. And by doing that across your experience, as users change the theme, your application is going to respond to those color changes. And it can provide a really cool experience for users. If you have certain branding needs, it may not be appropriate. In that case, you're going to want to hard code all of the colors, or at least test your application to ensure that theme settings are not going to make your application unusable, as we just saw. So I'm going to go ahead and hard code the color for my application title here. Right now, it's mapped to one of the system color resources. As I mentioned, it's mapped to the phone foreground color. I'm going to click on this editor tab and map the color to black. So now it's visible. And I'm going to go ahead and run my application again. Because it was interesting that that text box was visible on the design surface. But when I come to the actual search, the live search screen, it's no longer visible. So the problem is the text box control is mapping to those theme settings by default. So I need to reference a retemplated version of that text box control that doesn't respond to theme changes. And I happen to have that in my resource dictionary. Again, resource dictionaries are great for hosting styles and templates for items that you're going to need to reuse over and over in your application. So I have this text box style, and when I bring that into focus and apply it to my text block or my text box, I hit F5 and my problem is no longer visible. I'm able to see my text box and interact with it appropriately as a user, which is what we want. Go to my search page. Let's say that I enter some search criteria. And this app clearly isn't doing a real search, but it navigates me to my search results. And I can click back, or I could click on one of those search results. All right, so the last thing, real quickly, that I want to show you is motion clearly is an essential element in Metro style design, both for Windows Phone and Windows 8. And Windows Phone Toolkit has a series of animations and transitions and effects that you can leverage. And I'm going to quickly do that. If we go back to our application, you'll see that when I enter search criteria and hit enter, I don't see a seamless page transition. Well, I want a page transition. I have it everywhere else in my application, so I want to incorporate it here in this part of my application as well. Again, I have styles, page styles, that utilize those page transitions or reference those page transitions, and I'm going to access those. They're in my resource dictionary real quickly here. To do that, I go to this phone application page item at the top of my objects and timeline tool window. I'm going to right-click and edit template. Apply resource, and I'm going to select my turnstile page style. That's the name that I chose for it. It's not the name that anybody else chose. Now if I hit F5, I have a really nice experience. I have all my information displayed here, my long list selector that is serving the same purpose as Semantic Zoom in my Windows 8 application. I have my application bar with my commands for search. Windows 8 would use the charms bar. I'm able to search for a particular truck, and when I do, you see nice page transitions. Overall, it's a great experience. So let's go ahead and step back and the last thing that I want to talk about quickly is taking your application experiences to that next level. There are many ways that you can do it. I think this sailing example that we see here is very representative of taking an application to that next level. There's great branding up at the top here. The color in the branding is carried on throughout the application experiences. We see it over here in the ratings. We also see it here in the route for this particular sale that this individual might take. We see it in the wind information. There are also interesting infographics for the route that really adds that extra special quality to this experience, as well as an interesting infographic for the wind information. And then, of course, there's a beautiful background image of a sailboat in the background. Another way to take your experiences to the next level is by utilizing custom motion. And we're seeing a great example here in this MetroBar application. It's beautiful motion. It's enhancing the experience, drawing the user in. And it's really unique and branded. So those are just a couple of examples. It's up to you to really take it to the next level with your applications. Really think about how you can create that branded and custom experience. Utilize what you find in our native applications. Make sure that your application is consistent where it's appropriate. And with that, are there any questions? I do have a phone that I want to give away as well. Don't let me forget. I think we have like 10 minutes for questions. So does anybody have any questions? Yes. So can I try to summarize the question? I think I heard you. What are the differences when developing an application for both Windows 8 and for Windows Phone? Was that the question? Do I have that?
No, that's actually like developing for phone
7.5,
7.8, and for phone 8.
Oh.
So will there be some difference in the process at all?
Excellent question. I am really not the right person to answer that question in terms of the technical differences between the two, so I apologize. Really good question. Shoot me an email. I can give you my card after, and I can find somebody to answer that question for you. So any other questions? I covered a lot of information very quickly. Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. So let me know, the question is, explain the difference between Panorama and Pivot. Excellent request, and we hear that very often. So let me know if this answers your question well. So Panorama is really like a magazine cover, right? With magazine covers, it's highlighting interesting tidbits of information within that magazine. It's bringing it to the forefront to draw the user into that experience. It's not presenting everything. The intent is to really highlight those interesting aspects in that experience, give users information that may be more personal, relevant, and connected for them, again, to draw them in. It is something I think is more appropriate to design last in your experience. So once you work out your information architecture and your flow, then it's time to think about, and the data that you're going to display in your app, then it's time to think about how you can utilize Panorama to really highlight that interesting information. Pivot, on the other hand, really is fast and focused, and it's appropriate, I would say, at any level in your experience where you have a data set that you need to organize into meaningful chunks, like we saw in Outlook, to allow users to navigate that information, you know, quickly and easily. In the case of Outlook, it's organizing the information from all emails to unread emails to emails that you want to pay attention to. I'm not, you know, saying the labels correctly, but I think you get the idea. It can also be used to bring in a variety, maybe you have a variety of different types of data sets that you're bringing into your application experience. The pivot pages could be used to highlight each different type of data set. So I'm trying to think of an example. Maybe you're organizing information from Facebook and Twitter and from your contacts list. Maybe you have a page for Facebook, and that would be one pivot item, a page for Twitter, that would be one pivot item, and a page for your contact information, that would be another pivot item. It really is about that fast and easy to navigate experience. And again, Panorama is, it's highlighting the interesting aspects in your application and bringing it to the forefront, again, like a magazine cover. So did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Yes. You can. So the question was, is it possible? Right. Right. So the question was, can you have a background image in Pivot? Right?
Yes.
And you mentioned that in Panorama, they typically do have background images, and you see that parallax effect as you're navigating from right to left. It's a really cool experience. You can incorporate background images and other images, of course, into Pivot as well. There's absolutely no problem with that. And I think Skype, if you take a look at the Skype application, they've done a really good job. They're using Pivot for their opening screen, and they have a beautiful background image. And it's also really interesting, if you change the orientation on that opening screen, you'll see that they do it really, they change that background image in a very interesting way. So I think that's kind of cool to check out. So yes, you can. Yeah. So the question is, how do we make Pivot map and look visually to what you see in, for instance, the Contoso food truck's opening screen? You can't. Not easily, I know you can't. It is a control, and it is specified to look and interact like you see. In typical Windows Phone applications, it may be possible to retemplate it or do something else, maybe create a custom experience, but I really don't have details about that. I think the guideline would be not to do that. We have Pivot Behaves. On Windows Phone, it would be not to do that. Clearly, it's a different issue with respect to Windows 8, and it's not called Pivot. It is a different experience. On Windows Phone, I would highly recommend that you don't do that. For consistency's sake, again, win is one, that principle. Users are going to learn how to interact with Pivot on Windows Phone, and they're going to expect it to behave consistently. So you're going to want to be consistent. So don't do it. You possibly could, but don't. All right. Yes. Oh, that's a really good question. So the question was, with respect to certification, what are the major user experience issues that we're seeing? I'm not extremely up to date on that. I know in the past, we saw, and I mentioned this when I was walking through the variations of the information architecture for our Windows Phone version of the Contoso Trucks app, we would see this gesture competition with respect to controls in pivots and panoramas. I talked about the potential for gesture competition by using a mapping control in pivots or panorama. Again, maps, you can navigate in all directions, and it's going to conflict with the pivot and panorama navigation. The same would apply to slider controls. You're not going to want slider controls in pivot or panorama, or toggle buttons for that same reason. It's really going to conflict with the gestures in those core controls or those core app patterns. Let me think of other examples. Theming problems. Your experience needs to be usable, right? As users change the theme, we've seen controls disappear, like we saw in my example here. Labels disappear, and the application effectively becoming unusable. You have me on the spot. I'm trying to think of other examples. Oh, too small of controls. I don't think we've seen that very often. It's really like a great point, though. If you were to create some sort of custom control and you made it too small for gestures and, you know, like the, you know, finger size, which my finger's kind of fat, you could run into problems. If you are using our default, you know, the controls that come with our SDK and our toolkit, you won't typically run into problems like that unless you were to, you know, maybe use Viewbox to shrink that control down, which we would not recommend that you don't do. So really good point. So I've answered a little bit of your questions. I don't have all the details, though, so I apologize. So we have 9 seconds left. I have a Windows a Lumia 900 phone here, super awesome phone. And I am going to ask somebody to describe what authentically digital means. So the first person to raise their hand and that can describe what authentically digital means will win this Lumia 900 phone. Okay. Absolutely. That's definitely a key part of it. One more part. Yeah, it's a combination. You guys both kind of answered the question, so now I can't cut it in half. How about we do one more question, or one more? I wish I could magically duplicate this, but I can't. How about somebody describe what? How about not pride and craftsmanship? Oh my gosh, it's jumping out of my head. How about pride and craftsmanship? What does pride and craftsmanship mean? There are three things that I think are really important to pride and craftsmanship. First person to raise their hand. Nobody. One person, okay. Yep, that's one aspect. So what are the other elements that are aspects that I mentioned? Oh my gosh, I'm making these too hard. I'm sorry, you guys. All right, so we're out of time. Let me think of an easier question. How about what is win as one? First person to raise their hand. What does win as one mean? What's that? Oh, that's okay. Let's think here. Who is vice president for Windows Phone? First person to raise their hand. Say that again. No. Nope. I mean, he is vice president, actually, so I guess you're right. Here you go. Thank you.